Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Deduccio, and what we're doing this time round is the absolute classic TV series, The Sopranos, which means I get to talk about the current golden age of TV that we are living in, as well as a lot about organized crime. And this is an example of a request. I'm not going to say the surname, so Andy, you know who you are. I know this has been a while. We were talking in early January of 2024, and yeah, here we are months later, but I do get round to these things. It does take me time to record and do other ones I've already got on the schedule, and then people jump up and say, what about this, what about that? And yeah, I would absolutely love to do those for people who are willing to engage with me. For the record, I'm at Jem Deduccio on Twitter and on Threads, and I love to hear people's opinions and thoughts. So I will just put that there. Andy, I hope you like this one. Reach out to me online and tell me your thoughts, but hopefully you get your money's worth, all right? So, The Sopranos. Well, actually, something weird happened in 1999. Because you had two unrelated projects coming out with exactly the same conceit. The initial hook for The Sopranos was The Sopranos is a crime family in New Jersey, not New York, and they are led by Tony Soprano, and Tony Soprano has a panic attack, which leads him going to a psychiatrist played by Lorraine Bracco. And Lorraine Bracco is going to come up again in a moment because there's this weird DNA going on. So that is the introduction to The Sopranos, which leads to one of the greatest TV series of all time, certainly TV drama series. That's 1999 on HBO. Also in 1999, there was a Robert De Niro, Billy Crystal comedy where Robert De Niro plays the head of a crime family, has a panic attack, and then has to go and see a psychiatrist, in this case played by Billy Crystal. And this is a comedy. It's called Analyze This. It was so successful, it got a sequel, Analyze That. See what they did there? So these were unrelated projects. And the weird thing is, of course, Robert De Niro has been in some of the greatest gangster movies of all time. We want to talk about Godfather Part 2. You want to talk about Goodfellas. And the thing is, in The Sopranos, there are a lot of people who were in Goodfellas who are now in The Sopranos. Not James Gandolfini, who plays Tony Soprano, but Lorraine Bracco, for example. She is the wife of Harvey in that. She is the main wife in the series. And there she is playing the psychiatrist in The Sopranos. Then, of course, Robert De Niro's also in Goodfellas. It was a really weird year, 1999. Both these things, as I said, sort of did their own thing in their own successful way. And in the case of The Sopranos, it would run from 1999 to 2007. It ran for a total of 6 seasons, 86 episodes in all. But, as I said, this was the thing that's, and I've mentioned The Sopranos on a number of occasions, and it really did kick off this whole glut of quality TV drama that we've been having for the last, well, if we're going to start in 99, and we're now in 2024, this is a quarter of a century of top quality TV. Now, to be clear, there were good dramas before. But if you think of something like Hill Street Blues or NYPD Blue, these are very good TV shows, but they're on the mainstream TV, which means people don't swear. There isn't a lot of bloody violence. People fire guns all the time, but that's not quite the same thing. There are romantic scenes, but they don't go all the way. In other words, American television, terrestrial television, the networks are the same as most countries in the sense that there is a limit to what they can show. Meanwhile, obviously in movies, you can be as graphic as you want because there is a rating system. And the thing about HBO, home box office, is it started as a cable network, which sweet spot was the world of sport. So on HBO, you might be able to see a prize fight, but you got to pay for it. And over the years, because that was so profitable, they moved into drama. And because they were cable, they could do whatever they wanted. They could put up a little disclaimer at the beginning saying mature content or something like that, but they weren't restricted like an organization such as ABC or CBS. And therefore, there was the great line that blasted for years, this is not TV, this is HBO. And for a while, nobody could touch HBO. If it wasn't The Sopranos, it was Boardwalk Empire. I've done a whole episode of that. If it wasn't there, it was Game of Thrones. I've done a whole episode on that. And these more adult, high-quality, expensive dramas knocked everything else for six. There was just nothing else like it on there. Now, obviously, when it comes to the world of nature, nature abhors a vacuum, and you can't just have a monopoly of one organization doing this. HBO was winning Golden Globe after Emmy after Golden Globe again. And so you get Deadwood as well, and just all these amazing TV shows that had no equal. And particularly when I started watching the likes of those series that I've just mentioned, watching stuff on the BBC in Britain by comparison, I absolutely admit that the BBC will never have the budgets of a Disney Plus, a Netflix, or an HBO. Although there was the joint HBO-BBC series, Band of Brothers.
From this day to the ending of the world, we in it shall be remembered. We lucky few, we Band of Brothers.
But people tend to remember that as an HBO production. It was done with BBC, but they were a junior partner. I digress, but another amazing series. In fact, I would argue that Band of Brothers is the single greatest mini-series of all time, or short period series of all time. Bar none, no notes. Amazing. But the BBC on their own, they don't have those kind of budgets, particularly something like the revamped Doctor Who, and therefore they depend on clever scripts, good writing, good acting, which in a way doesn't cost anything, or doesn't cost anything like big spectacular set pieces of Game of Thrones type special effects and fantasy series. BBC can't compete on that, but the BBC still had the issue of the watershed and how much can they show, and it just was miles behind what HBO was producing in the early 2000s. Now, likes of the BBC and CBS, etc., they've all upped their game. And indeed, the problem with HBO is if you've been top of the heap for 15 years, other people will get it and start improving on your formula. So, for example, Breaking Bad, which is considered one of the greatest TV shows of all time, that was not produced by HBO. Meanwhile, you've got HBO producing things like The Wire, which is, again, another sensational show. So The Sopranos kicked all of this off. You like whatever gritty TV show that's you're watching at the moment, Recently, I finally sat down to watch Fall of the House of Usher, which was amazing. A weird update of some of Edgar Allan Poe's stories, very loosely retold around a fictional family that has made their fortune through opiates. So it's a horror version of the real opiate epidemic and the Sackler case. And it's a really impressive series. I'm not going to turn around and say it's one of the greatest things I've ever seen, but it's really good. And if you like, this is the problem of now in the 2020s, because you've got Disney Plus, Stars, Hulu, Sky, HBO, Netflix, Amazon, blah, 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 blah. Depends where you are in the world, but you're spoilt for choice. Sopranos, because it was on HBO, Sky in the UK, it's actually originally on in Channel 4. I digress. The point is, it didn't have necessarily the big followers, but it was so shocking, so new, that not everybody would be ready for that kind of thing. So therefore, it had a cult feeling to it, which only grew and grew and grew. And it is like a fine wine. It has just aged spectacularly well. The other thing about it is, well, I've mentioned Tony Soprano, and I mentioned Lorraine Bracco as the psychologist.
My understanding from Dr. Cusimano, your family physician, is that you collapsed, possibly a panic attack. You were unable to breathe.
They said it was a panic attack. Of course, all the blood work and the neurological work came back negative.
There were great female roles. I also need to do a huge shout out to Edie Falco, who plays Tony's wife. And whereas the wife role is quite often a thankless role in gangster movies, action movies, or just generally in TV, David Chase, the creator of The Sopranos, made really sure that Edie had plenty to do. And even though Tony is a dangerous, violent man running a criminal organization, Edie absolutely takes him to task over certain things and nags him, but also shows a certain level of warmth and compassion. It's a very real husband-wife relationship between James Gandolfini and Edie Falco. You can buy that. The quiet times. And the clever thing about The Sopranos, compared to the likes of The Godfather or Goodfellas, is it's largely about the domestic life of these people. Yes, of course, you see Al Pacino in The Godfather doing stuff at home, but the great scenes are the gangster stuff rather than great scenes of domestic bliss. The Godfather famously starts with a wedding, but that's an unusual thing. And the point of the wedding is it's a cover almost for the meetings that the Don has with various people. And Michael Corleone's explaining, you know, who all the different people are there. It's a new way to get into the world of the gangsters. Whereas in The Sopranos, some of the greatest scenes are actually of domestic issues and the conversations about the kids and where are they going and does Tony want his children to follow in his footsteps? Spoiler alert, not really. No, he doesn't, as most criminals don't. They understand how dangerous and how desperate their life is, and therefore they want something better for their children. So it's everything. Yes, we can talk about the sex and violence, but it's the mature themes, the themes of what it is to be an adult, what it is to be a parent, a husband, etc., a wife, when you know your husband is doing terrible things. It is fabulous. Now, the thing I'm also going to throw in there is you get the final scene of the last season. David Chase also changed the rules in the sense that if you look at a standard network show, be it Hill Street Blues or Friends or your NYPD Blues or anything, Nash Bridges, The Fall Guy, whatever, there is a routine to this stuff. As I pointed out in the Friends episodes, you need your X number of episodes to make sure that you can cover the network over the course of a year. Makes complete sense. It also means that you also have this filming routine. You know when the next season's coming out. Whereas with The Sopranos, David Chase, as I said, it was from 1999 to 2007, and it's six seasons. There's gaps there. In other words, David Chase released them, filmed them, when the scripts were ready, not when the new season had to be out there. The other interesting thing is, again, if we're talking about standard network, they have to take into account advertisement breaks and other elements as well, like where's it slotting into the schedule. You don't need to do that in the world of cable. So what's interesting is the shortest episode of The Sopranos is 43 minutes, which if you include things like commercial breaks, that gets you to an hour. But the longest episode is 75 minutes. It's about 50% longer than the shortest one. And they're all a little bit all over the place. Yeah, they clock in usually around about 50 minutes, give or take. But sometimes they might be 56 minutes, sometimes they might be 52 minutes, which that 4 minutes is about 20% of a Friends episode. That is a significant change in writing. Again, what David Chase did is he wrote as much as he thought would be relevant in the show. There is, as I've said before, these behind-the-scenes screenwriting tricks, such as the three-act structure or the five-act structure, and these character arcs. And this can mean that people start turning these suggestions into almost like a biblical dogma. You must have a three-act structure or it's not satisfying. Whereas I have heard a number of people say who've been learning screenwriting, looking at the scripts of Soprano episodes and finding it really hard, trying to say, well, this doesn't seem to be a three-act structure. It doesn't seem to be a five-act structure. And eventually, there was a conversation with David Chase about this, and he said, yeah, I wrote everything, and then I chopped it up into episodes. So a lot of the episodes don't follow a three- or five-act structure. And so it's a reminder to writers out there, the three- and five-act structure, let me put it this way, a story generally has a beginning, middle, and end. That would be a three-act structure. It is more complicated and more nuanced than that, but just take my point here, okay? And with David Chase, it's a point of, yes, you can do it that way, but if you've got a whole series to play with, you don't need to follow that slavishly. Every episode doesn't need to have that peak and trough element to it. And that's one of the reasons why. And it's with The Sopranos. Prior to The Sopranos, if you were an actor, the meatiest roles were in movies. Winning Best Oscar for Best Actor or Actress meant you probably had the most meaty role of the year. But once you've got The Sopranos and you have hours and hours to delve into these characters with these mature, intelligent angles at the whole of the human condition, now we're getting to the point that Tony Soprano is a more three-dimensional character than Michael Corleone, who over the course of three Godfather movies you see for about 9 hours, whereas in the case of Tony, you've got him for, I'm going to say overall, about 86 hours. So you have almost 10 times the Tony to the Michael. Don't do maths too hard when it comes to the world of drama. It's all about the feels, right? But the thing about The Sopranos is it showed something that could be creatively a darling, scooping up all of the awards, but also hugely commercially successful. HBO spent a lot of money on it, but it got a lot of new subscribers. People were talking about HBO not anymore as a sports thing, but as a drama thing, giving HBO an opportunity. So the thing is that you might turn around and say, well, Sopranos was a fairly expensive series to run. Yes, but if you're going to show a prize fight, well, you're going to have to pay the organizers of the prize fight millions of dollars and you get one thing. And you don't even know how long that's going to be. This is the time in the 1980s of the likes of Mike Tyson, who was sometimes knocking out his opponents in the first round. So what are we going to do for the rest of the evening? Whereas at least with a drama, you know you're going to get your hour plus commercials or advertisements. And so The Sopranos worked beautifully for everyone. Moving towards the world of history, there was interesting criticism over The Sopranos series that was it glamorized. I mean, this is the thing that keeps cropping up with any of these stories about crime, that there's a danger of glamorizing it. For example, I'm just going to throw it out there, Wolf of Wall Street, which a lot of people don't necessarily see as a criminal movie, but it absolutely is. The crimes being committed by Jordan Belfort are there, explained, and he does go to prison. Spoiler for the end of Wolf of Wall Street, for the record, it's about the journey, not the destination on that one. But it's sort of about sales. And as I've said, I'm a business trainer by day, which includes sales training. And particularly when that movie came out for a couple of years afterwards, lots of young men were coming up to me excitedly saying, I've learned all these sales techniques from Wolf of Wall Street. And I would always ask them what, because I didn't see any sales techniques. He's a con man. He's tricking people. And that's not what sales is. I have done a whole episode on sales. It's a few years old, but please listen to that one. I was really proud of that one because I was able to pull in several different aspects to it. But one of the criticisms of Wolf of Wall Street is, to be blunt, it looks like he's having a pretty good time. He's having lots of fun with lots of smoking hot ladies. He seems to be having good time with his friends. And while, yes, the pigeons do come home to roost, consequences happen, but there is far more fun in that movie than there is. There's a brief moment about how he had an affair with a girl and it led to the husband of this girl killing themselves. And there's a tiny little fragment of the footage and it's like, no. And the thing is, he's just ripping off all these people. These are their pensions. This is how they're going to retire. And it's all gone. And it's all gone on wine, women, and song, Jem said euphemistically. And it needed, I would say, if you took out 20% of the insanity that was his life and added 20 minutes of various scenes of older couples who have now lost everything, because it's all seen from his perspective, you don't get the pause on the damage of this. Now, going over to The Sopranos, you have lots of implications of the death and destruction and caustic effect of organized crime. That's there. But the arguments against the criminality were slightly more subtle, that because it's set in...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The New Jersey Mafia, they're not very big. They're not very good. Now, they are shown on the periphery of the five families. More on that in a moment, everybody. But Tony Soprano, because it's about him, it makes the Jersey Mafia look more organized than they actually were in the 1990s. And there were recordings of various organized crime who watched and loved The Sopranos. So, yeah, you could argue once again, in its own way, in its different way, it's glamorizing violence. What's interesting is that when there was Boardwalk Empire coming out, they described it as The Sopranos with spats. And that was surprisingly hard to say. But the irony is about The Sopranos is it was taking the classic gangster stories, such as The Godfather, such as Goodfellas, and such as the gangster films of the 20s and 30s, and updating them to the modern era. So by pulling it back to the 1920s, you could say The Sopranos is gangsters without spats. And if you don't know what spats are, they're these white coverings over shoes that were very popular in the 20s and 30s. They were a very fashion thing, very much associated with gangsters, or sharp-dressed men at least. The Sopranos was an absolute landmark TV series, which still has impact today. So in the very last episode, I'm just going to put this out here, the very, very last scene is quite divisive. Some people think it is really disappointing. Some people think it's one of the greatest endings to a TV show ever. My issue is this. David Chase said that he wanted to leave it ambiguous right at the end. But if the implication is that this is Tony Soprano's Last Supper and he doesn't realise that he's about to be gunned down, you don't see this. Obviously, if you saw this happen, but obviously from your perspective, if you are shot dead, you never know that because you're dead. So it just ends really abruptly while he's there with the family in a diner. And maybe he is gunned down. And the camera pans around and you see different people sitting there. It's like, are they just diners or are they a hitman about to pounce? It's very clever. But the thing is, the problem I have with that scene is if he did want to make it more ambiguous, it is not all seen from his perspective. If it was only seen from his perspective and then the screen goes black, then you could argue it. But because it's shot from lots of different people's perspectives, it means that it's just a family dinner. I do think that the sixth season, which did take a while to come out, the sixth and final season, it was the most mixed bag season. It has some of the best scenes in it. It also has some fillery scenes or fillery episodes as well. And the problems he's up against, none of them compared to the likes of Joe Pantoliano, who was also amazing in Memento and also amazing in The Matrix. And here he is playing another psycho. But when he is dispatched, the last season feels like the last season. It's nowhere near as much of a letdown as the likes of season 3 of Ted Lasso, which really did seem to have completely run out of ideas halfway through the season. Yes, so with The Sopranos on a bad day is better than most dramas on a good day. But the problem, as I've said, is, you know, The Sopranos may have been a bit cultish to begin with, but there was nothing else like it. Fast forwarding 25 years, there is loads of stuff out there like it. And because of Prime, terrestrial TV, Hulu, Disney, Netflix, etc. Nowadays, there's this fragmentation. Like I said, I mentioned I've recently seen The Fall of House of Usher. Now, that was a big thing in, I think, the back end of 2023, and yet I'm only watching it now. But there are other things that people have said, oh, it's like I've never bothered with Dope Sick because I don't really want to go through the whole opioid epidemic again. I've seen documentaries about it. It's terrible and awful. I don't need another drama about it. But, you know, people have raved about it. Well done you. I have never seen an episode of Justified, for example. And yet, I adore Boardwalk Empire. Maybe that's the big HBO gangster series you've never got around to. Or The Wire, which never got the love it properly needed. And so today, there's always another season of something coming out. And do you even subscribe to that channel? So there's this fragmentation, there's this glut. Can you really possibly keep up with this stuff? And yes, The Sopranos shows you. It took 9 years to finish the story. It was worth the wait, whereas nowadays, Netflix can quite often cancel things after 2 seasons. So a lot of the times it's like, am I going to wait to see all of it? Ozark. Ozark's the big Netflix Breaking Bad Sopranos thing, which I have never seen. So, you know, people keep saying you should watch it. And it's like, yeah, maybe I need to sit down and watch it. But then something else comes out and it just, people are falling over each other with these different seasons and they can't all win. Amazon in particular has spent billions, quite literally billions, on high quality drama, which never caught fire, never became part of the cultural conversation. Man in the High Castle, 5 seasons, really great. Have you seen it? But Amazon can afford these flops, in essence. Slow Horses on Apple. Love it. Really love that show. But because it's on Apple TV, it hasn't caught fire. Everybody who sees it says it's great. It is. I would describe it as a good BBC TV show, but with the budget to make it worthwhile. Gary Oldman is clearly having the time of his life in that one. If it was, I watched a little like mini documentary on sort of the state of TV at the moment in streaming. And there was a very valid point that if Slow Horses were on Netflix, everyone would be talking about it. But no, it's on Amazon. They're not Amazon, Apple Plus. There you go. I'm even confusing the names of some of these streamers. Right. I think I've sold you on the idea that if The Sopranos hadn't have existed, then none of this would really be in the state it is today. I mean, of course, Netflix would still have existed, but It might have taken them a lot longer. They might never have made House of Cards or Orange is the New Black. Again, these things are so beholden to the model of Sopranos. And again, you might be sitting there going, oh yeah, I remember when those were a thing, and nobody's talking about them today. So, let's get into some history, shall we? Let's talk about the Mafia. So the Mafia comes from the feudal structures of Sicily. The idea was, and you get this a lot in history, is if the central power is weak, the peripheries have to, again, fill that vacuum with something. And so, particularly in Sicily, which was Italy, wasn't unified. It might have been part of the Roman Empire, might have been a continuous state in, let's say, the year 400 AD. But by 500 AD, that had all gone to hell in a handbasket. And then until the mid-1800s, so more than 1,000 years, you've got things like the Papal States, you've got Genoa, you've got Venice, etc. There are lots of different states with different power, and particularly in somewhere like Sicily, which really was on the fringes for a few centuries. It was owned by the Arabs. It was under Islamic controls. That's how far away it had gone from central Christian authority. So in the medieval era, you have the rise of these families, and they may have paid lip service to the papacy or to whatever supreme state on paper ruled the area, but the reality is they ran everything. And so you owed your security, your loyalty, your wealth to these local lords. And if these local lords took a grudge against each other, they would attack each other. The Italian for this is a vendetta, and we still all know what a vendetta is. These blood feuds would stretch across generations. So, in reality, the whole of Europe had these aristocratic families who would shed blood against each other. But this continued on into the 1800s in Italy. Indeed, the Mafia itself takes this move from aristocracy to organized crime into 1861, when some of these people moved to America. So it starts in Sicily in the medieval era, let's say arbitrarily, because of course people weren't writing down their criminal enterprises, but let's talk about the 1200s. That's how old these sorts of structures can be going back to. There are various different families in Italy, or organizations, I should say, in Italy, with various different names, and the one from Sicily is the Cosa Nostra, which if you translate that, it means our thing. This is our thing, not somebody else's thing, our thing, which actually Cosa Nostra is all like, oh, you really know your mafia if you know that phrase. But if you translate it, it takes away all of the allure. And so you do get some of these people setting up in New York City, in Harlem, in the 1860s. And what you get with any kind of immigrant community is there is a fundamental bias by the powers, the legal structures that are there. Who are these foreigners who don't speak our language? We tend to think now of Italian Americans as very integrated, but in the 1860s, the Italians and the Irish were very much seen as other, which is a very strange thing. So racism wasn't just a black thing back in the 1860s. But again, this could be in any country. I'm talking about the Mafia in America, but every country has their immigrant communities that band together. We understand each other. We understand the old ways. We've brought the old ways from Sicily. And the term protection money, we quite often see this idea of like, hey, well, if you don't pay it, we'll start busting up things, which obviously was the implication. But actually, a lot of people would happily pay this because the police weren't going to look in. If I'm protected by the Mafia and somebody robs me, it's the Mafia's job to get retribution on that. And the police aren't going to bother with my little family grocery store, my Italian-run grocery store in Harlem. It then spreads to other cities which get Italian immigrants, most notably New Orleans and Chicago. What happens then in the late 1800s is we get these different gangs, organizations start vying against each other. And that goes to another level when you get prohibition in 1920 And now these criminal organizations, which are already well organized, is the word. You know, what is the example of a criminal organization? It is a group of people who are deliberately trying to break the law. So a thing in America, which a lot of people in the rest of the world don't realize, is some states gambling is illegal. In Britain, for example, you can go to any high street and there is a gambling shop there. And so therefore, yes, of course, there is organized crime in Britain. I'm not saying there isn't, but that isn't very lucrative for the criminals because you can do it without criminal interaction. You can just walk into a betting shop, as they're called. So gambling meant that you had all these underground groups and places where people could gather, and it wouldn't take much to them put in a bar. And if they're already smuggling things in to avoid taxes, that can easily turn smuggling in alcohol, and people still wanted a drink. You got also prostitution, which was also, it is largely illegal in most of the world, although interestingly in America there are some states where it is legal, whereas in Britain it is illegal. Yeah, that is a way that criminal organizations may make money in Britain. And therefore, you get these organizations going from making some money to making all the money in the 1920s when a massive part of society would like to have a drink. Thank you very much. And this leads to more and more bloody violence. The classic is everyone knows Al Capone. Everybody knows about the St. Valentine's Day massacre. That was actually between the Irish and Italians. That wasn't between the Italians. And what you get in 1931 is you get Salvatore Marzano setting up the five families in the Italian mafia. And so these five families have become the pillars of organized crime in America. And they are the Gambino, the Lucchese, the Genovese, the Bonanno, and Colombo. And so Salvatore Marzano gets this way through violence, simple as that. But what's interesting is almost as soon as he founds the five families and because of the violence, he becomes capo di tutti, he becomes the captain of all. He is the guy in charge of everything. Almost immediately, there is then a hit put out of him by Charles Lucky Luciano, who sets up the commission. And so the commission is created in 1931, and that is still to this day what the FBI at least believe is the way that the five families talk. Because there'd been so much bloodshed for decades, the idea behind Lucky Luciano's commission is when we sit down and talk these things out, it is better for everybody in terms of business. And this is the thing about organized crime. They don't actually want to just be killing people all the time. That's bad for business. People are scared to come out onto the streets. You're going to have less gambling, less prostitution, less drinking, drugs, whatever. So actually, it's better to just put a lid on these things and just take out the people that you need to. And so you've got the commission, which is where representatives of all of the five families sit down and talk things out. Okay, you guys seem to have ripped off our new deliveries in New Orleans, so you now owe us compensation or whatever. And so it's pretty organized. And indeed, there is a hierarchy. The FBI has worked it out. There is the boss at the top. There's the sub-boss, the second in command. There is the consigliere, which we've already heard of from The Godfather. This is the main advisor. They're not actually the boss, but they're the brains of the outfit. And then underneath, then you have the captains. Each captain's in charge of 10 to 20 soldiers. And everybody I've just mentioned are made men. In other words, if you kill any of those, you need permission to kill them because they're part of the organizational structure. But then you have associates. These are people who perhaps do the odd job for them. They're not made, and therefore they're technically not part of the family, and if you want to kill one of them, you don't need to ask permission. But also, they tend not to be the soldiers. They don't tend to be the hitmen. They might just be perhaps a legitimate business that stores some of your nefarious goods for a few weeks before it moves on somewhere else. What people are worried about in these organizations is obviously somebody being an informant to the FBI or what have you, and that absolutely is a thing. There are people who sometimes infiltrate or sometimes people who are flipped. And in 1970, to counteract this, in America is very different to many other countries because you have state crimes, you have interstate crimes, which is where you get the FBI involved. So you've got all these different layers of law enforcement that don't necessarily talk to each other and don't investigate certain things that are connected. So to bring all of this together, in 1970, you get the RICO Act, which stands for Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organizations Act. So that's what the RICO stands for. And the general joke is, in legal terms, is it's never RICO, because RICO is used quite often as a threat, but to prove this criminal enterprise is incredibly difficult to do. However, it was used very effectively by one Rudy Giuliani in the 1980s that didn't destroy the five families, but absolutely crippled them. This is the thing about Rudy Giuliani that people forget. There is the classic line from the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight trilogy, which is, you either die a hero or live long enough to become a villain. And Rudy Giuliani is the classic example of that. This is the lawyer who was genuinely putting his life in his own hands, trying to take down the New York Mafia in the 1980s. And then he becomes mayor and he does better leadership in 9/11 than the president of the United States. He becomes Times Person of the Year in 2001. And quite right, too. So had he died to a mafia bullet in 2002, he would be remembered as one of the greatest Americans of all time. Instead, he's remembered for his leaky hair and his ridiculous defense of Trump in front of a garden center. Just embarrassing. Okay, I'm going to move on from that. But the RICO Act absolutely crippled the mafia's criminal enterprises. Mafia kept moving out. This is the thing, it's entrepreneurial. They spot a gap, they go for it. Oh, gambling's become legalized in Nevada? Well, we could lose money that way, so why don't we actually back a lot of the hotels and casinos? Now, what's interesting is in The Sopranos, and this is another reason why, on top of everything else, one of the downfalls of the mafia is there's this great scene in season six of the mafia guys going in and trying to intimidate a chain. I don't know if it actually is a Starbucks, but the implication is it's a Starbucks. It's like, hey, yeah, you got to pay us money or this place could burn down or you could start having thefts. And the manager simply says, if I don't account for all my outgoings, I get fired. So there's no money for you here, because the head office knows how much is coming in, how much is going out, at what price, and therefore there's nothing left over for you. And I'd like to keep my job, and the next guy would like to keep his job. And just the confusion on the look of the mafia guys' faces is just priceless, because that's the other thing. With the rise of internet, there is lots more criminality online. We've all been fished, hacked, whatever. You've had weird approaches online, I'm sure. There's now these cyber farms, but they're not done by the mafia. They're not known for their IT skills. Instead, these are bot farms in North Korea or China or Russia. Those are the main epicenters of this kind of nefarious activity, and you're not going to get them because they're in different countries protected by totalitarian regimes. So there is always going to be organized crime. There's always going to be vice. Human beings are not fundamentally good all the time. Most of us stay out of trouble, and I hope you do too. And therefore, there will always be some form of criminal organization, but there's no doubt that the good times of the mafia are gone. And really, The Sopranos is showing you. The Sopranos is far more. It may not be as low rent as the real New Jersey mafia, but certainly Tony Soprano is no Michael Corleone. You know, there is clearly a massive gap in wealth and ambition compared to those two characters. Both of them obviously are fictional. So, there we go. Huge love to The Sopranos. Hope you like this one. And as always, another episode coming soon. Bonanono. Bonanono. I'm having difficulty pronouncing one of the five families. Please don't kill me.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Taylor Itsinas.
Taylor Itsinas. I'm Kayla Itsinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.